Okay, folks, I think we're, if we can start the recording again. And also, folks, I'm told that the tickets for the gala event here in Prague, which is tomorrow evening, are available out at the...
Bob Connolly, starting to call.
Hi, Bob. Bob, you don't need a ticket to the gala tomorrow, so you don't have to stand in line. The gala tickets are available at the CZ Nick booth, which is where the really long line is. So if you want to get a ticket to the gala, then you'll need to stand in that line. It's tomorrow night. And so with that, we are back, and we've got the contractual compliance team in here with us. I'll let them introduce themselves. And they did put a couple slides together based on the topics that I had sent, so we'll let them walk through that. And I will take a cue once they get started. So with that, I'm going to turn things over to Maggie and let her introduce herself and the team. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Maggie Sirard. I'm the head of contractual compliance at ICANN. With me today in the room, I have a couple of team members. I have Stacey Burnett, I have Owen Smigelski, and Carlos Alvarez. So thank you for this opportunity, and we're scheduled for 45 minutes. By request and per discussion with Matt, there were a few questions submitted to us. So who's Vanna here? Who's pushing the buttons? Volker, all right. So on our agenda today, what I'd like to propose is that you allow us to go through the responses to the couple of submitted questions because they kind of tie in together. We'll go through those responses and frame it in the content of the current state and then be more than happy to take the questions that were not addressed for these responses, for these questions. Then we also have a second item that we'd like to bring to your attention about common compliance issues we're seeing based on volume of complaints. And it's more for awareness, but also for us to be able to collaborate better. The last bullet I have in there is high-level update. And the reason for that high-level update, I've restricted it to a couple of slides, but in the appendix, you will find a lot more slides in there. Please take a look at them. We'll be more than happy to talk to them. But there are a lot of changes from the systems and the process and the templates that are happening, and this is our forum to share with you. So with that, next slide, please. So the questions that were submitted yesterday were a few, and they all relate to the WHOIS data problem reporting system, known as WHOIS Inaccuracy. So the first question was, what are the recent changes to the WHOIS complaint process? The process in itself has not rolled out yet. So there were no recent changes yet. We've been communicating, and as of Costa Rica, we said there will be a change to it, and it will apply in the tool. So I've got a slide that will show this. But to answer this question directly, the changes have not happened. There was a change to the tool in 2001, because one of the issues that were assigned, or an example given to us through this, is that there's a repeat of notices sent to the registrar. So what happens is there was an automation delivered in 2001. If the registrar does not respond to a compliance notice, there was an automated notice that goes out to follow up on that one. So the follow-through after a few steps is still being done manually. Next slide, please, Matt. What are the retinal checks? Basically, again, as it exists today, there are manual checks being done after the automated notices have gone through and time has expired for those. So the system does filter out duplicate complaints submitted during the past 45 days. The system is not perfectly correct, because we know there are still some duplicate complaints that go through. So we have addressed that requirement, and it's on the list of things to be done. The next one, please. How are repeat false complaints handled to stop them from continuing? The answer to this one is still the same. that we've given you before, there is no automatic mechanism to filter those complaints yet. The system we have is very old, very archaic, and we have fragmented tools today. We have a plan, which I will give you an update how that plan's progressing to bring those systems up to date. So the complaints are tracked manually. And also keep in mind, I've got, like I said, a couple of team members with me in the audience, and we'll open more questions to this that can speak to it in a very operational fashion if you have certain questions of that need. Today, for compliance, we don't have one central tool. We have three fragmented systems, we refer to them, that do not even talk to each other in addition to tracking through emails and Excel sheets. It's not something I'm proud to announce here, but that's what we inherited. But we do have a plan to bring it into a consolidated tool. So automation, validation, all those are part of the requirements for the modified system. Next one, please. This is very important to understand, is that today, the who is inaccuracy tickets, when we receive complaints, we broke them in here because you are impacted in both areas. We want to refer mostly to the single submission who is data problem reporting system. The way it exists today, when a complaint is logged, you go through three automated steps that are happening. And one is immediately sending a notification, a 15-day notice after that, and then a 45-day. So those were old existing processes that I'm describing. Then after the third notice is when we internally, our team, takes it manually and processes through them. So the time frame here is very long, and it's not really efficient and effective. And when we were in Costa, and the second slide will address that, but before I go there, I want to also talk to the bulk. Many of you have shared in previous discussions, and we had a pilot team to discuss this. The bulk today is submitted by one area only. It's still in beta. I have received lots of requests to use it, and I've said no, because the tool is not production ready, and it does not follow a full loop of the process to be able to serve not only compliance, but you. You get bombarded from that tool, and then it's not planned right. Let's put it this way. So that tool is not a full long-term production tool, and the requirement will go into the new system we're looking at. So next slide, Matt. So this is currently what you see. The process change that's going to happen is this. As I shared in Costa Rica, the proposed process, which is now being coded. So we have our IT team going through the enhancements. Our first and immediate short-term objective, we know we have the three fragmented tools, is to bring them all in alignment with the process that we have built over this past year. It's very important to address all complaints in a consistent three-step fashion, then enforcement. So we applied the changes to the C-ticket because the C-ticket did not have a lot of customization and configuration like the W-ticket. So the C-ticket, we wanted to make sure we roll it up to the three-step process, and it's working fine, and it's in production. The UDRP complaint intake system is also now, as of 20th of June, updated. Work is now underway to bring the WDPRS process to this three-step process. So what's going to happen in the first notice? It's going to do that 15-day notice, and you will be immediately asked to provide proof of reasonable steps, followed by the second notice or inquiry, followed by a third notice or inquiry. And then if by the third notice there is no valid response and there's still an issue, it does get escalated to enforcement. So the process, again, to answer that first, second, and third, The process has not changed yet, but it will as soon as the enhancements are in the tool, so we can make sure we're tracking it and reporting on it properly. Next slide, please, Volker. So the WDPRS compliance process changes that will be applied once this system has been upgraded is the following. You have okay. So with this slide, it concludes those three questions that were asked. What I'd like to do, if we can take the questions, Matt, that relate to this area, or Volker, I don't know who's chairing the meeting today, but if you can take the questions as it relates to the WDPRS, because there are other slides that can address other areas too.
Sure. Thanks, Maggie. So I'll start a queue. I've got Ben, I've got Jeff, and I've got a couple. There goes Elliot. Okay. I've got Rob. Ben, go ahead.
Hi, Maggie. I mean, this is all fine, and, you know, whenever there are genuine complaints or inquiries about who is, this process is fine. What I'm more interested in is what framework or what rules are you going to build around repeat offenders, people that continuously claim that who is invalid that isn't. I mean, we see the same guy over and over and over again. And also, I saw the, do you say 45 days check to see if there's been previous complaints? And can't that be linked with updates on domains or so on? I don't think 45 days, I think 45 days is too short, because we just keep on getting complaints about the same names for just no good reason. And I want to know what you're going to do to filter out what is becoming a nuisance.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'd like, Owen, if you can address the first question of the operations. Can you repeat that, Ben? It was very specific to the complaint.
I can't remember what I said. Yeah, repeat offenders. Just, you know, the same person complaining over and over again at just about any old name.
So, Owen, if you don't mind sharing what is the team doing today, because you're one of the guys who processes a lot of those tickets, and then what are we going to do for the future? We'll go to that one.
You're going to hit, is this on? Okay, you said you'll handle the second part, Maggie? Okay.
Well, identify yourself first, please.
Owen Smigelski, I've got Mycan. What we're doing now currently is it's a manual. There is no way to flag them actually in the system. You know, we do review them manually, and we see the common names that come up, and so we are tracking them, taking some notes on what it is that's, what they are doing, seeing how they're coming up, and that's something that we're looking at and considering. There hasn't really been anything decided on what to do yet, but, we are looking at that, and, something will be coming out of that, we hope, in the future.
So to address the second part of your question, the requirements to identify common offenders or repeat offenders, whatever is the right, bad actors, whatever it's called, is a requirement that will be put not in the enhancements that are underway now. I'm being very honest with you, because we cannot apply the enhancements to that level in the current state. We're aligning it to the process. There's going to be an upgrade, which is our midterm plan, and I have a slide on that. And in that upgrade, we're taking in the validations, the capturing the repeat offenders. So between now and then, it will continue manually. And I'm being very transparent, because we don't have the right tools to apply it to. I need to upgrade the tool first under one system instead of three fragmented tools.
Okay, so I understand that now is today, but when is then?
I have a slide on that. I'll get to it.
Jeff.
Okay. So.
Microphone.
Sorry. So I wanted to first call out. I know it says coming soon, but you've already put these changes on us. So the change of from the old system to the new system is already in effect for, I know, for us and a few other registrars. So I wouldn't put that as coming soon, since it's already in effect. But more important, I think that if you look at the new system and how it's set up, and I'll tell you the effect that it's had on us, you've complained that it's a long and burdensome process to go through, but what you've done is you've shifted the burden to registrars to sift through all the bogus complaints, because at this point, if they're not corrected, then you're going to go to send the breach notice. how I see it. So if you go back to the few other slides, we have to send you documentation on every single bogus request and WHOIS complaint we see, because if you look at the revised, first notice will require registrars to provide proof of reasonable steps. So we get, you know, thousands of these WHOIS complaints, and some of them are for CCTLDs, some of them are for people that say, hey, I want to buy something on that website, and they didn't send me a receipt, but they still send in a WHOIS complaint. And then we have to work through these, send you notifications, send you the evidence, the documentation, and because if not, it goes to enforcement. So I looked at our numbers, and of these thousands we received, only 3% were actually valid WHOIS complaints. So now you're making all these registrars here run through hoops, or else we're going to be in a breach notice for all of these complaints, which only a small percentage are valid. So I don't see how, you know, how this becomes an effective system. Maybe it's more effective for ICANN, because now you have less work and you've shifted the burden to us. But for us, this becomes almost an impossible piece to go through, especially when, I mean, we bang our heads against the wall because so few of these are valid, and you're asking us to staff up and to do this. If not, then you're going to send a breach notice. So I don't know, you know, how this system, how to reconcile that.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. So let me stop. I try to remember everything you started from the beginning. You said we have applied it. I would like to ask you to send me what you have received and you think it's applied, because we have not applied it yet. It still goes through the first three current states, like you see it on the top. But I don't want to say. I'd just like to see what is it you're referring to. If you'd send me an email or two that you've received, that would be greatly appreciated. Because, again, like I said, the tool has not been upgraded. It's being worked on now. From the other points you've made, if I may say, let's keep it very simple. It's not about shifting burden. You, as much as everybody in this room and outside this room, know and hear of all the activities around WHOIS inaccuracy. So the efficiency we're bringing to the process, if you look and measure the time from step 1 to 5 that happens today, that's over 60 days. If it's a WHOIS inaccuracy and you are sitting on the right side, on the different, you put yourself in the other, on the other area. I hear it from a contracted party perspective, but I'm looking at it from a neutral perspective. How can we make this more efficient? So the most simple approach I'd like to ask of you, which is I've already asked of some other registrars, they just shoot me an email, hey, close this, it's bogus. We're tracking it manually, and we have several staff members tracking it manually. There may be a slippage here and there, and we are seeing those. But I can tell you some of your counterparts have sent an email, close this, it's bogus, and we capture the name. So I understand it's a little more manual, but again, this is what I'm not saying we're not doing changes. Changes are happening, but we cannot roll everything together. It will be a disaster.
Just a quick point to that. I would be happy if that's the system, but what you're saying is first notice will require registrars to provide proof of reasonable steps, including documentation. If I could just send you an email that says, please close this one, it's bogus, let's put that on the record, I would be happy for that. But the point there where it says include all documentation, which you have stated is correspondence with the registrants and proof that you have taken steps, that is a different point than just sending you an email saying, this is bogus, please close it.
Well, it has to be looked at on a case by case. Again, I cannot generalize it to that level, but I know, I think, Matt, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you've sent to me a couple of, like, were Google or something. Can you share that example with your counterparts? An example like that makes sense, but some of them are not as clear as that and will require that information.
Yeah, I can. The flip side to that is that I agree with Jeff in that I think what you're hearing from us is that if there is a manual review, then this stuff shouldn't even get to us. And that's the point, is that I shouldn't have to go back and say, this is bogus, close it. And I'm doing it on the ones that I get. And to Jeff's point, he's getting 100x what I'm getting. So from our standpoint, it does feel like that burden is being shifted. And if there is a human review, then the same human that's looking at it at ICANN should be able to tell it's bogus just the same way that we can. I've got Rob, I'm sorry, the gentleman down at the end of the table as well, and then Elliot.
Matt, just one second. You didn't share the example on Google.
Yeah, so the example was I got a complaint notice, and I sent it to her and said it's bogus, and they closed it. That's exactly correct.
What was the domain name?
Google.com.
So, again, it's very obvious if it's a bogus name or not. So common sense will be applied, and I hear you, Jeff. I hear each and every one of you. The burden is not just on you, it's on us. And we are working on it, and by Toronto you'll see it, and even before. Toronto's in October. You'll see it before.
Rob, go ahead.
Similar question to the previous ones. We don't see anywhere near as many as some of the larger registrars, but what we do see with WHOIS complaints is the same vexatious complainant bringing them up again and again and again, even when there's nothing wrong with WHOIS. What detailed steps are you going to implement to stop repeat complainers making bogus complaints? Because that increases our workload, and you're telling us we've got to provide documentation or even send an email saying this is bogus over and over again for the same complaints from the same complainants.
Okay. Don't mean to put Owen on the spot again, but today when... How do you identify? I know we're capturing it. So again, let me make sure it's clear. It's captured manually, and we can describe to you what happens manually. The automation aspect is not immediately end of July. It'll be the next phase. But Owen, can you share that about bogus complaints?
Yeah, in that aspect, we actually do, if there is something that reaches that 45-day limit, we do manually review. We look at the WHOIS, what the complaint is, what the correspondence has been with the registrar, and we do classify what it is that ticket was, whether it was invalid, whether it was privacy proxy. And so we're looking at this over a course of time so that we can identify, okay, who are the people who are doing the submission and what types of issues are they having? Is it invalid reports, or are the things actually being suspended or updated, so that we can track that data and be able to take the action that's necessary for it? We just can't shut that down. We need to be able to figure out what it is that those people are doing and take that look. And so that there are, the several of us who are reviewing those tickets are capturing that data for us to analyze and determine what can be done.
So you're not going to stick in a system that says you make three bogus complaints, you can't make another complaint for 12 months?
So you said the keyword system. That's not in place yet. We're putting at it from a human perspective. And again, if everything is about bogus complaints, may I save the audience? We hear you very loud and clear. And I'm looking at the operational staff I have with us today. We'll take that back and see how can we improve the manual process that exists today. And we will capture the requirements for that's been already captured. But what I'd like to do, if there is a further clarification on those requirements before the automation takes place, we can come back to the registrar stakeholder team and request for pilots to discuss that with us. So we take an action item to look at how can we tighten that manual process further to identify those bogus complaints and avoid them. But also, please, like I said, send it to us and we will note it. But we will look at it internally too as it exists today.
Thanks. So, Joyce, I got you in the queue. We've got a long queue at the moment, so if we can try to keep it brief. And also for the folks that are remote, please make sure to state your name when you're speaking. Gentleman down at the end of the table.
Daniel Greenberg from Xenergy. We assist clients in reporting false information, especially when it relates to phishing and domain names used for fraudulent purposes. And what normally happens is after the 45-day period, the WHOIS information isn't updated, changed, or nothing happens to the domain. And then we get an email saying, I think there are a few options, and you can select which option has occurred. And the one is nothing's happened. And then after that, nothing happens. And we just want to know, what procedures are in place to make sure that it is enforced, because in some cases it's clear phishing activities. Sometimes they used blatantly false information. And it, on the face of it, if there was a manual process, something should have been done.
Great. Thanks for that. Is he a registrar? Elliot, go ahead.
Are you a registrar?
Yes.
Oh. Maggie, I'm troubled by three things. First, the point of systems is to create exceptions, which will then allow for discretion. You know, I think what I've heard from, you've made great recourse to, don't worry, systems coming. And that doesn't comfort me at all, because it's still going to rely on your group's application of discretion. You used, and then in choosing to make your point, you called on Google.com. There are over 100 million names in the generic space. If the exceptions are going to be Google and perhaps Facebook and Amazon, if we're lucky, three of Matt's clients might be taken care of, but well over 100 million won't be. And our systems can't bear that. What we've been experiencing, to reinforce Jeff's point, is a really disturbing lack of willingness to exercise discretion. And when I say discretion, I mean to look at very simple facts on their face and filter out things. So, we're experiencing, Jeff talked about CCTLDs. That doesn't take a lot. I mean, I don't know who these, I guess you use the exception. Yes, if it's Google.com, we're okay. That's not comforting. Right now what's going on is nothing but a shifting of the burden. And I want to make sure before I leave this point, will you be dealing with registrars engaged in more serious issues than who is complaints later in your presentation? Good. Thank you.
So I think I've identified Jeff and Elliot as a future perspective for further discussions on this exception reporting, and I'll leave it at that. I heard you, and I don't have anything new to add to what I just said.
The one thing that you should deeply think about,
uh-huh,
feels as if compliance is getting more and more bureaucratic and acting in a defensive way. We certainly do not feel at all that you and I together are working to solve problems. That is not the tenor that's being set right now.
Okay.
So I've got...
Can I respond to Elliot's question real quick, please?
You can, but let's try to keep it brief because you guys have only got 15 more minutes left.
Sure. Elliot, if you can send us the examples of the domain names that are CCTLDs...
You're picking on one thing. That was Jeff's example. We have many others, Stacey.
Okay.
And when you say send you the examples, we send them to you and they keep coming back. So that's been tried and failed from our perspective.
Okay. Joyce, quickly, please.
Yeah, I think that I can make, if I can provide us with some link about the bogus WHOIS request. Because we get the email from ICANN saying that I want to buy this domain name and the person is not responding to our request, right? So we can, if we have a link to ICANN and say this is a bogus and just delete it, and then on ICANN side maybe tell the complainant to say that if you get rejected three times, you can go to this form and file a real complaint, and then that will probably save a lot of time for both you and us.
Thanks, Joyce. Okay, I've got James, Nick, Kelly, Ben, and then we're going to cut it off there. James?
Okay, really quickly, I'm not going to pile on, so I'm going to skip my comment about CCTLDs. Don't send them. make sure you're sending them to the right registrar. When we get complaints from other registrars, we don't know what to do with them. Please refrain, and I'm talking now to your staff. I know we want to get out of the office, too, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday before a holiday weekend. That's not the time to dump 600 incidents on our team down in Arizona.
Pacific time.
Yeah, we'll start the 15-day clock Monday morning at 9 in those situations. The final thing is, and this is not really necessary to bogus or fraudulent complaints or people just shaking the trees, but we should probably push into you the idea that once a name has been verified by a registrar, it is inoculated for a period of time. And perhaps that's come up already in this conversation. I apologize if I missed that point. But, it doesn't have to be a bogus complaint. It can just be a harassing complaint. And I think that that's something you should consider. Thanks.
Thanks, James. Nick?
I don't want to beat a dead horse, but if you could set up some kind of system where we could submit either repeat domains that get reported or repeat complainants, just somewhere that it was actually submitted so it was on some way to track both for us and for you, I think that would be highly beneficial and an easy stopgate until the system that's going to come in place actually is completed.
Okay, I'll look at that as a new requirement, and let me tell you why. That means you're going to compete with some validations that are really important. So if you have specific ones that you know are bogus, I know you've heard your counterpart say, we send them and no one hears. I'm telling you, send it to me directly, and we will make sure it's captured. And my account is working at ICANN. Okay, so if you have specifics, send it to us. I have the some key operational stuff with me today. We've taken action notes on how to best improve and address that. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Maggie. Kelly?
Kelly, Registrarty. I just wanted to actually clarify a point. I don't know if I misheard it. It said in the manual check it was after 45 days. Is that correct? So after we've had it for 45 days, then it goes to manual check to see if it's bogus. Is that correct? So we've been looking at it for 45 days, and then you look at it to say, was it bogus?
There is a system check up front, Owen. Can
right.
you talk to that?
Yeah, right now, the this is Owen from ICANN. The first, I'm just trying to think, the first three steps, I think, are automatic, and it's not until you get to that fourth that we actually look at it. When it reaches the 45 days, that we do that. Before that, the system's all automatic.
In the proposed system, obviously, which is coming soon, and it'd be good to have a timeline, an estimate of when coming soon is. Obviously, that check needs to be as soon as possible before we've wasted any time.
Okay. So what's coming soon is what you see on the second part of the slide, and we're eliminating those steps up front.
Good.
And it will have more of that gap stop until we have the full automation for validation. It will have a human intervention to look at those.
Okay.
But there will not be a 45 days.
Mm.
Okay.
Thanks, Ben. Ben, you get the last word on this topic. Shocking.
Sorry. I don't want to labor the point, but you know, we've seen these slides for the last three meetings in some form or another. We've heard the same promises about changing things, and we're still sitting here today talking about them. Now, I understand resource constraints. I also understand many other variable factors. But essentially, this is creating a lot of... We're wasting a lot of time and energy on these things that we keep on telling you about. You know, you've said send them directly to you. We got called up for a meeting with you the other week because we had 7 complaints out of 2 million domains. You know, and then I tell you it's this repeat offender consistently. And what do I get the next day? 10 complaints by the same person. So I just don't understand why it's so impossible for you to do it.
So do you want me to show you what we've accomplished since we started this? Is that what you want to hear about? Because you said you've been hearing it. You're right. Process changes and process implementation are two different facts. So you have to establish the process clearly, communicate it, and we've, like I said earlier, we've rolled it out into the C-ticket system. I'm dealing with 3 systems, guys. Until I have one, I have to do it across 3. Did it with C-ticket. I did it with UDRP, and the WDPRS is underway now to be completed, go into production end of July, if not sooner. So that will align them to all these 3 processes. And again, with the other issue of the bad complainants and the bad actors, as we get them manually, we're tracking them. I don't have a system yet. Until I finish rolling this out, I'm doing an upgrade, and that will go in there. And that's right immediately in the same timeline.
Great. So, Maggie, we've got about 10 minutes left if you want to continue to run through your deck.
Okay. So we're going to talk about some common compliance issues that we've observed, and we want to provide you with some guidance to assist you in your interest in remaining compliant with the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. And some of these you've heard before, but we thought it would be a good idea just to go over them again because, again, we continue to see issues in these areas. Keeping your primary contact information updated. It's a relatively simple process, and for whatever reason, we constantly hear excuses. Oh, I moved, and we forgot to send it. So if you could just make this a priority, if for some reason your fax number changes, your telephone number, the person who's acting as the primary contact, it would be great if you could timely provide that information to ICANN so that you can remain compliant with your obligations. Next slide, please. Registrar Accreditation Agreement records. Pursuant to Section 3.4.2 of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, registrars are required to maintain registration agreement records showing evidence that there was an agreement between the registered name holder and the registrar, some form of consent. And so often when we request, when we're investigating a complaint, we request records from registrars, and part of those records that are required under Section 3.4.2 include evidence of a registration agreement. And unfortunately, what we've observed is registrars are not all registrars, of course, but some registrars are not maintaining adequate records to demonstrate that they have an agreement with a registered name holder. And so what they'll produce is a generic copy of their registration agreement. And that is not sufficient proof. And so we have some examples of what we've seen some registrars doing to maintain these records. Next slide, please. So while it's probably not practical for most businesses in this day and age to keep a paper-based document with the registrant's signature affixed, there are some electronic ways to maintain this important documentation. So you can use a timestamp record with an associated IP address, and that would be sufficient evidence that the registered name holder has entered into an agreement. You can obtain an electronic signature, or you can, one example we saw with a registrar is they referenced the registration agreement and provided a link to it in the final message before finalizing the transaction for the domain name. And they had a date stamp, and so that was sufficient evidence that they had that the registered name holder had entered into the registration agreement. And so those are some examples that you might want to study. We've actually issued some notices of breach concerning this matter this year to eName Technology and Allentron, and you can find those on our notices page to get details about that. Next slide, please. Website obligations, the 2001 and the 2009 Registrar Accreditation Agreements require that you must provide an interactive website if you are offering domain names. And then the 2009 RAA requires registrars to provide valid contact details on their website. So we get complaints that certain registrars are not providing websites or they don't provide valid contact information. And so if you could just regularly check that, especially if you know you've moved or your number has changed, please make a reminder to yourself to update that information on your website.
So, Volker, if you don't mind, please go into the next one more. So, again, what have we done since we've seen you in Costa? Like I said, the consumer complaint, I needed to check your DRP that was just launched when we got here to Prague. And the WHOIS ticketing is scheduled for July 2012 to align with the process. We've rolled out document management system to help us have a central location for all the documents we receive from the contracted parties. We also have completed a prototype for the reporting. Think of it like a Rubik's Cube. We're going to do, when we get to Toronto, we will have a show and tell on all these In the slide deck, I have attached a few slides to show you, and I will leave that to you to look at, please. It's in the appendix. How and to what level of details we are getting to at this point. We're going to be capturing more data, and as we improve and enhance our tools and upgrade, it will give us more flexibility to slice and dice the data, not only by level of domain name registration and location, but hopefully by a lot more. So please take a look at that. And again, to address a lot of the concerns I heard today, and Elliot, you're right, the plan is, I'm not going to get on that same soapbox. We inherited what we inherited when I got here, those three tools. We know they're not delivering. So we're doing minimum on what exists today. We conducted three feasibility studies this past trimester since Costa Rica to see what would be the right solution or midterm solution to get us to a one consolidated tool to address all complaints. I don't want to think of complaints as C-tickets or W-tickets or UDRP. It's a complaint type regardless, and we'll apply the same process and will help us interface and validate more online. So the feasibility study will conduct at the end of this week, and upon return, we'll make a decision and we'll relay the plan for the midterm, which will be one midterm consolidated tool that will address a lot of the things that we heard about today. The one thing I want to bring to your mind, to attention, please, and we will have an outreach session in October, very important task. We never had an audit strategy for contracted parties. And as you, if you recall from Costa Rica, we hired a new staff member who's very knowledgeable in audit and risk management. We've been designing audit strategy for contracted parties, and that will entail and a lot of additional dialogues with you to share the approach, the methodology, and we hope to publish on our website what are the standard audits that we'll be doing, by when, and what we call will be on-demand audits. So we will bring an update on these and some show and tell by October. Next slide, please. The last thing I'm going to leave with you, and one more slide, please. One of the processes, we've come to you before and we had a pilot group from the registrar stakeholder team to help us define the referrals, when law enforcement refers matters to us. We had a pilot team from this group and different stakeholder members of the ICANN community. So now we turned it around. What if we receive complaints, or what if in the process of complaint processing or audits, we identify matters that are outside the contract but need to be referred to law enforcement? This is, if you see in big, bold, draft brainstorming activity that we are conducting. Please take a look at it, and I will get in touch with the stakeholder chairs to identify and send an email to ask for pilot team members to discuss and have a dialogue on this. It's a draft. What happens if we have a matter that needs to be referred to? And again, this was leveraged on a previous exercise we did. The next slide, let me know if you can open the link, I'm not sure. We try to identify a standard form that regardless of the type of complaint that needs to be referred to, we want to have a standard approach of capturing the data. So we took a first swag at it based on different dialogues and conversations in the community, and we would welcome yours too. With that, like I said, the appendix has a lot of information that will be important. One of them is the change in the IRTP that was in effect June 1st. So if you have any questions, let us know, please.
Great. Thanks, Maggie. You know, it strikes me that it might make sense for us to try to arrange some time with you over the telephone between now and October, because clearly there's a lot of stuff going on your side internally. We're seeing registrars with some frustration on this side, and so maybe, you know, it might make sense for us in August or September to try to get a teleconference together where you can provide a briefing so that the group here can get a better understanding of where you are with your timelines and things like that. So thanks for that, and we're out of time, so appreciate you taking the time to come and present that, and we will send out the slides to the group just so everyone knows those will be posted. So I want to thank Maggie and her team for coming by and chatting with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we've got Marika. If we want to just take 1 or 2 minutes to let Marika come up to the front and let the compliance folks escape out the back door, and we'll let Marika come up here. Welcome, Marika. Maybe you just, we've got some new members and folks in the room. Maybe you just want to give a quick introduction and then you can get started.
Okay, thanks. Hello, everyone. My name is Marika Konings. I'm a senior policy director at ICANN. I'm actually based in the Brussels office, and I mainly support GNSO policy development activities, and that's what I'll be talking to you about today. So if we go to the next slide. So speaking to Tim and also knowing your involvement in some of the issues we're working on, I picked the following three topics to talk to you about today, but just to know that we actually have over 20 active projects in the GNSO, so if there are any other issues you have questions about, I'm more than happy to try to answer those, but I'll refer you as well to some other information sources where you can get updates on what's going on. So I'll be talking about the inter-registrar transfer policy, Part C, locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, and fake renewal notices. So we can go to the next slide. So maybe before going into the Part C, well, we can already put this one up. But before going into the Part C, I understood there were some questions on two of the outstanding recommendations from the IRGP Part B PDP that are in the process of implementation. So just very briefly, those two relate. The first one relates to a new provision that would be introduced in the IRGP in relation to the locking and unlocking of domain names. I think with the requirement that a domain name is locked within 5 business days following a request by a registrant to have it unlocked. And the other recommendation relates to a requirement for registrars to display a link in the Whois information in relation to the registrar lock status. So it's a link that provides them further information to registrants on what that exact lock status means. So it would redirect to an ICANN website where that information is displayed. So those are two items that are in the process of being implemented. So you should probably see further information on when those come into force in the near future. So then going on to IRTP Part C, well, I don't have to talk to you about what the IRTP is all about, but maybe just to mention that this is still the number one area of complaint when it comes to consumer complaints that the ICANN compliance team receives. So from our perspective, still a very important area to get clarification and improvements in. If we can go to the next slide. So the IRTP Part C working group was tasked to address three specific issues. The first one dealing with a change of control or change of registrant function, looking into whether it would be a good idea to have something like that. A second question relating to whether forms of authorization should be time limited. And a third question, bless you. And the third question asking whether a registry should be required to use IANA IDs rather than proprietary IDs. So the working group actually started off with a data gathering exercise, and I just want to thank all of you because we actually received, I think, 100 responses from registrars, which really helped the working group in its deliberation because it really provided some insights into what the current practices are of registrars and where you see issues. So that has been extremely appreciated. So as on the basis of the data received and weekly conference calls, email deliberations, we got input through a public comment forum and also feedback from some of the stakeholder groups and constituencies, the working group published its initial report just prior to this meeting. And if we go to the next slide, I'll just briefly take you through the recommendations that are included in that report. So in relation to the first question, as you all know, there currently is no policy in relation to a change of control or a change of registrant. But at the same time, you know, some use the IR2P for that purpose, which, you know, creates a number of issues. And I think the working group also did some information gathering and noted that, you know, change of registrant is done in a lot of various ways and not always as easy or as simple as it might look. The working group also found that CCTLDs actually, you know, all the ones we've spoken to have a process in place to manage a change of registrant. And we had a very good meeting with them and where they explained how their different processes work and gave us some insights on what, you know, might work in a GTLD context and what might not work or might not be appropriate to recommend in this space. So as a result of that, the working group is recommending that there should be a change of registrant consensus policy. If you go to the next slide, they've already set out some requirements that they think should be part of such a policy. First of all, both the prior registrant as well as a new registrant need to authorize the change of registrant to really make sure that both parties are in agreement. There's a provision that, you know, this approval can also be provided in the form of a pre-approval or a proxy. Working group also extensively discussed that, you know, probably better not to have those two changes, a change of registrant and a change of registrar, taking place simultaneously, as, you know, this could create complications, although it doesn't mean that, you know, they couldn't take place shortly after each other's. But if both changes need to be made, the recommendation is that the change of registrant should be completed prior to initiating the change of registrant. Real objective as well to really not create any unfair advantage or disadvantage for any segments of the domain name industry. As, you know, you might be aware, there might be different needs or desires from an aftermarket perspective to, you know, the normal transactions and when it comes to a change of registrant. If we go to the next slides, however, there are a couple of open issues that the working group is looking for input on, and I would really like to encourage you, you know, to think about these questions, and if you have any strong views, to either, you know, provide them as part of the public comment forum or come to the workshop that the working group is organizing later this week. So the first question there is, should there be a restriction once a change of registrant has taken place following an immediate change of registrar? So should a 60-day lock be applied? And I think the thinking of some in the working group is that this might prevent instances where a domain name is hijacked, that it immediately gets transferred away, a change of registrant, and immediately transferring it out to a registrar and, you know, impossible to trace. While others in the working group think that this would unnecessarily prevent the movability and flexibility in the domain name market. So would really welcome to hear your views on you know, what you think would be appropriate. Then there's also an open question, what actually qualifies as a change of registrant? Is it, you know, just a change of the name of the domain name holder? Is it, you know, if just the last name is changed? Is it the email address? Is it at a change of registrant? So there the working group is also looking for input as what are those changes that should qualify as a change of registrant? Another question, maybe more administrative question, should this become a standalone policy or should it become part of the IRTP or some kind of hybrid solution where you create a transfer policy and one leg of that would be transfer between registrars and the other leg would be transfer between registrants? That's also an open question. And then, you know, with all the recommendations, the working group is really looking for input on as well. Are there, you know, the recommendations that are being put forward, are there any unforeseen impacts that the working group hasn't thought about and they should take into account when they continue their deliberations on these issues? So we go to the next slide, please. So then for charter question B, there are currently no restrictions on you know, time limiting the use of FOAs. Some have expressed concerns that this might result that an unexpired FOA could be used at a later time, and when it would be an unauthorized transfer, if a registrant doesn't realize that at some point in time they did agree to the FOA. So there are some issues with that. At the same time, you know, the survey found, or the survey we did, that, you know, a majority actually don't see or haven't heard about any issues or seen issues as a result of not having a time limit. But at the same time, I think the majority of respondents says that they actually apply a time limit themselves. So if we go to the next slide. So as a result of the information received, and I think also feedback that you know, applying a time limit was not considered to be a big burden or very difficult to implement. The working group is recommending that a new provision is added or is revised in the IRGP, which would then read that once obtained, an FOA is valid for 45 or 60 calendar days, it's an open question, the time period, or until the domain name expires, or until there is a change of registrant, whichever occurs first. And there's also a recommendation, and it comes back to making sure that it works for the different segments of the markets, that it's the FOA is also enhanced to support pre-authorized or auto-renewed FOAs by a registrant if that person has chosen to opt out of time-limiting requirements. And I think it's especially relevant in the aftermarket situation where someone might have put their domain name up for sale and doesn't want to have to keep on renewing their FOA if it takes over a longer time period. If you go to the next slide. So here are also a couple of open issues. I think the time limit the working group is currently considering is, you know, between the 45 and 60 days. I don't think there are any strong views either way at the moment. So again, if there are any views on what would be more appropriate, or if this is even too short, or if this is too long, would be most welcomed. There's also been discussion that the implementation of this recommendation should be accompanied by the appropriate security measures. And I think that relates as well to the opt-in, opt-out mechanisms, and you know, that those should be discussed in further detail and clarified in the final report. And again, the working group is looking for input if there are any, you know, unforeseen consequences of this this proposed recommendation. Go to the next slide. So the last charter question relating to the question on IANA IDs. As you're probably all aware, when you're accredited with ICANN, you get an ID assigned by ICANN. But then a registry may also assign you a particular a registrar ID or proprietary ID when you accredit it with them. So we got feedback from some of the registries that are using this system that they mainly do this for security purposes, and some also commented that this is because they're also dealing with CCTLD registrars and you know that CCTLD registries. In that case, of course, they don't have IANA accredited IDs. So registrars have provided feedback that this poses difficulties at times to identify the registrar that is asking for a transfer or that is linked to a certain transaction. So from that perspective, there's a desire to have actually access to the IANA ID at all times. Can you go to the next slide? Also, one of the observations was that in the current environment, it might be manageable, but with new GTLDs, this might change drastically with a huge number of registries coming on to the field, and that might make things even more confusing. And also, as a result of the data gathering survey the working group conducted, the feedback was also that many hadn't experienced problems, but at the same time, most did feel that a standardization might simplify transfer, and also felt that the effort to actually do so would be minimal to some. So as a result of that, if you can go to the next slide. The working group is recommending that all GTLD registry operators will be required to publish the registrar of records IANA ID in the TLD's thick whois. But at the same time, existing GTLD operators or new GTLD operators that want to use proprietary IDs can continue to do so, but as long as they also publish the IANA ID in the registrar's records. So you can move to the next slide. So again, here the question is, are there any unforeseen consequences that the working group hasn't thought about in relation to this recommendation? So if you have any suggestions, please put those forward. Go to the next slide, please. So what are the next steps? As I said, this report has been put out for public comment. It will be open until the 4th of July, and then a reply period will start, which is open on the 25th of July. So you have the link here where you can submit your views. Then there's also a workshop that the working group is organizing tomorrow from 9 to 11. So you're all invited to come there and share your views and then provide your input. And following that, the working group will review comments received and continue its deliberations on the open issues identified. And I think the objective of the working group is to finalize this report for submission to the GNSO Council by the ICANN meeting in Toronto. And just looking at James as the chair of this working group, I don't know if he's anything else to add on this.
Yeah, I was going to actually give it over to James to let him comment. So go for it, James.
Thanks, Marika. Thanks, Matt. It's always good to know that everybody's looking out for me. So as Marika mentioned, I'm the co-chair of the IRTPC working group. And just to kind of put a button on this update, there is a workshop tomorrow. There is an open comment period. A year from now, there will be, well, sooner perhaps, there will be new requirements for you under this policy. So read it, and please consider it, and please give your feedback now, because what we don't want to see is folks claiming that they were blindsided in March or April of 2013. This is we're sounding the alarm now that these changes will be impactful, and they will be coming down the pipeline by that time. We're getting a really good sense of perspectives from all over the spectrum of registrars, but also the different use cases and business models and market segments that are served. So let's keep those coming. Let's keep asking the tough questions about what the secondary market needs and balancing that versus what the primary protections that the primary market wants to have. I noticed that we had some feedback over the weekend from the registries about IANA IDs. The fact that they have one GTLD and 100 country codes, is that even a concern of ours? Do we care? Are they, doing what compliance did earlier and just pushing the workload down to us to make their lives easier? These are questions that we can address as part of this working group. And I think we've got a good set of recommendations. We've got a great group, which includes a number of registrars working on this, and we'd love to hear more voices, more perspectives, more feedback. Thanks. Tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Sorry, I can't say that enough. Tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Where is Carlin, which is where we were yesterday, mezzanine level by the elevators.
Yeah, I think it's next to the gym, right? I've got a queue. Rob, anyone else? No, Rob.
It's almost exactly the same as what James says. If you're a registrar and you accept domain names by transfers, if you're a reseller and you transfer domains for your customers to your management at your chosen registrars, if you're active in the secondary market, or even if you just sell domains on Flippa, this policy will impact your business. We need your comments back.
Agreed. One more plug?
Yeah, just so we're clear. And we're on the record. No one is coming back in Beijing to say that they didn't hear of this and they didn't know about it. They didn't have a chance to talk about it. Okay? Thanks.
9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Carlin 1-2.
Can I just make one?
Joyce.
We are trying to recruit new pay members, but I think we should welcome the new member. I just met a new member. He asked me a lot of questions about the rules. I said, can I sit there or should I sit there? Can I come in? So let him introduce himself. He's a brand paid new member.
Okay. Hello, I'm David Liu. We come from Nature and Nature in Taiwan. You're just talking about Beijing. We are very, very interested about that. Thank you.
Excellent. Welcome. Thanks for putting him on the spot, Joyce. That was luckily, we're a friendly group.
Yeah, and maybe we can get a list of new payment, a new member, and we can send them.
We take cash, yeah. James.
He already paid. Yeah. So.
We take bar tabs.
Yeah, right. Okay, Marika, back to you.
Yeah, so if we can move on the next slide, the next one. So another policy development process is currently ongoing related to the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. This was an issue that first came up in the conversations in relation to the IRTP Part B, and that was also raised then in the context of an issue report on the UDRP. So as a result of that, the Council decided to initiate a policy development process on that limited specific issue only. And as most of you might know, there currently is actually no requirement to log the domain names in the period between filing and commencement of proceedings. And the UDRP itself doesn't include a definition of what a status quo or what locking actually means. Should we go to the next slide? So the working group has a number of PDP or a number of charter questions it's trying to deal with. I'm not going to read through these, but basically, the bottom line is, should there be a process for how domain names should be locked and unlocked? Should there be a definition of what is locking in the context of this this effort, and whether there should be any additional safeguards created as part of any potential new recommendations? Go to the next slide. So this working group has formed not too long ago, quite a big group of members, 28. I think we have representation of all stakeholder groups as well as participants from WIPO and ALAC. And I think there's, if there are people interested in this, it's just still not too late to join because we're really in the starting phase of discussions. So one of the first tasks that the working group was assigned is to obtain community and public input on these issues. So as a first step, the working group has developed a survey, one survey for registrars and another one for UDRP providers, to really get insights into what the current processes and practices are and also what are the issues being encountered. So really would like to encourage you should have received all the email via Matt, and I think the email link to the survey also went out through the ICANN registrar mailing list. So really would like to encourage you to take a few minutes to go through the survey. We've made it as easy as possible. I think most of the questions are just ticking the box and explaining what you're currently doing, because that will really help inform the working group in deciding on how to tackle this issue. So there was a question, because the charter actually itself only talks about the locking of a domain name, so we actually clarified in our weekend session that the recommendation should also include information on how to unlock, so as it's closely linked to each other. So the working group will be looking at both those issues, when, how to lock, and then also when, how to unlock. Go to the next slide. So you want me to talk slower or pause at the end of every slide?
Give them a chance to read the slide.
Okay, so I'll go a little bit slower. I think the slides will be available as well, or maybe they are already available. I'm happy as well to take questions later on by email or clarifications if needed. So the next steps on this are that the deadline for survey responses is the 10th of July, so we really hope that many people will have a chance to complete it. I checked over the weekend, and we already had 34 responses from registrars, but I'm really hoping that we can match the responses we got for the IRTP survey, where we got, 100 responses. So please, if you have not done so yet, complete this. Following the review of responses received to the survey, the working group is going to have a look at that, and then the plan is also to then open a public comment forum, which might have some questions inspired by the feedback received on the survey, and also request input from all the stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as other ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees, to really make sure that input is received early on in the process and that can all be considered as part of further discussions. As a working group is just getting started, they haven't really decided yet when they would like to publish the initial report. It depends a bit on how long it takes to gather all the information, all the data, and of course how long it takes from there to get to recommendations. So the working group is still working on outlining its work plan and the approach for tackling all the questions it needs to address. Can we go to the next slide? So if you're interested in this working group, they are having an open session this week on Thursday from 9 to 10:30. I believe it's actually in this room, if I'm not mistaken, but I've included the link so you can find there where it's actually taking place, and also the link to the workspace of the working group. So you can find there, for those that want to read more about the charter and the charter questions, you can find all that information here. And I'm just looking at Michele now, who's the chair of this working group, to see if he's anything else that he wants to add.
Thanks, Mike, for putting me on the spot. The only thing, I suppose, is the survey that you should all have got. I think Tim sent it out via the main notification thing. So, there has been quite a good response so far, and it would be helpful to get more responses. The more input we have, the easier it will be. Basically, it's the same with all the other working groups. If you can give us input, then what comes out the far end will hopefully be more realistic and will reflect reality. This one I don't think is going to blindside anybody, or they can't claim that, but in common with all the other working groups, there are common periods, there are plenty of opportunities, and we do have a meeting this week, Thursday 28th, 9 to 10:30. Thanks.
So I don't know if any questions on this specific topic. So moving on to the next item, fake renewal notices. Go to the next slide. So, well, I think you're all familiar with fake renewal notices, and I've heard many of you as well complaining about it on the nuisance it is. So this was actually an issue that came up in the discussion of the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group. I think they completed that work actually, I think it's almost about 2 years ago, and they actually recommended that a policy development process should be initiated to address this issue. But after further discussions in the council, they actually decided that they wanted to have a bit more information on, you know, what it actually is and what the real problem is before deciding whether or not to go forward with initiating a PDP. If you can go to the next slide, please. So as a result of that request from the council, a small drafting team was formed, and I think several of you were, I think James, you were on there. Michaela, were you on that as well? So the fake renewal notices.
So it was us.
Yeah, it was.
Mikey, and it was the same four guys.
Yeah, it was a very small group that worked on this, because the idea was to prepare a specific request for information to the registrar stakeholder group, as you know, you're the main ones affected by this issue, to really get input. And so we did as well a small survey there. We got 19 responses, but the feedback was a bit mixed, as the responses were basically split by half of the registrars saying that this is really a serious problem and really a nuisance, and the other half actually saying, well, no big deal at all. So I think that left the drafting team a bit in the middle. But they did then discuss as well, like, what could potential next steps be for the council to look at this issue. If you go to the next slide, please. And so they submitted a report already a while ago in March 2012, but the council decided, as it was developed by a relatively small group of people, and we didn't really do any public comments at that stage, it might be helpful just to put it out and see whether there are any community views on the report itself and the recommendations in there. So we actually got 6 contributions, and I think some people commented on the definitions used, and there should be more clarity on what is advertising versus fake or misleading notices. Some as well expressing support for initiating a PDP, some also suggesting alternative approaches for dealing with that. So the council actually requested the drafting team to look at those comments and then decide whether, on the basis of that, they wanted to make any changes. And they did that and made a couple of changes and submitted it back to the council again on the 21st of June. You can go to the next slide. So just to briefly mention some of the options the drafting team has put forward for consideration, and now it's for the council to decide which ones, if any, or other options to pursue. So the first recommendation of the working group is actually consider adding a section to the REA that addresses business practices. So really make clear that sending misleading notices is not accepted business behavior. Another proposal is to actually add this to one of the current or one of the upcoming IRTP PDPs, as the ultimate objective of these notices is usually the transfer of a domain name. So the question is, could it possibly be addressed as a part of the IRTP? Another suggestion made is adding this issue to the upcoming PDP on the RAA. If it's too late to add this to the negotiations that are ongoing, maybe it could be an option to actually take it as part of the PDP on the REA, as it's going to deal with those issues remaining. Some also suggested that linking this to a possible upcoming PDP on who is. Go to the next slide. Go ahead.
Sorry, just wanted to clarify, and maybe you said it and I missed it, but these are not all of the options. These are either or options. These are what's the word I'm looking for? They're mutually exclusive to some degree. These are options, not a list of recommendations.
Right. But if you go to the next slide, there's actually, I think some of them are not mutually exclusive.
Okay. Because I saw some eyebrows raised for the first one about the business practices. And what we wanted to be clear from the drafting team, that option, I think, to do it a little bit more justice, was that you can't claim to be the sponsoring registrar of a name that you are not. It's very clear and seems very straightforward, but it would certainly undermine this practice. Thanks.
Right, and exactly, as James said, most of these, you know, I don't think the drafting team, my vision, you know, following all these avenues is more a choice between what will be the appropriate and probably most time-effective way of doing it. And if you go to the next slide, I think there's one recommendation that's probably not, you know, mutually exclusive. Well, first going to the first one, there's as well the recommendation on initiating a narrowly focused PDP just on this specific issue only. On the previous slide, we talked more about adding it to other projects already ongoing or starting in the near future, but another suggestion is to just do a PDP on this really narrowly focused issue, and I think that's something that was strongly supported as well by the ALAC in their comments, because they feel this is an issue where, you know, we could really show that we can do something quickly and address it. And then the next option, I think that's one of the ones that's, you know, can be in parallel to any of the other recommended next steps, is to, you know, ask the ALAC you know, and work with them to really encourage better education and awareness of this type of abuse amongst the end user community. So when people receive these notices, they actually know that, you know, what to look for and not fall into a trap. Another suggestion was to raise this issue with the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission in the United States, to see if registrars are in compliance with the relevant law. Of course, I would only apply if a registrar is based there, but this issue was, or this potential next step was added, as well as this is what happened in the past, I think, with one of the regular offenders. And then, of course, there's the option as well to not proceed with any action at this time. So the next slide. Not sure if I'm being funny or. So basically, it's now in the chair of the drafting team will be presenting to the GNSO Council coming Wednesday on the report and you know, explain what was changed based on the comments received. And then it will be for the council to decide what to do next. And I think there it's really as well for your stakeholder group as you know, you're the ones really affected by this issue, to probably provide some guidance to the council on what you think would be the best way to approach this issue, and which of those recommended next steps might be a viable the way to approach this and address it. If you go to the next slide, please. So here are just the links and the public comment forum for further information. If you go to the next one, please. Are there any questions on this specific issue?
Thanks, Marika. Two follow-up points. Just you could sense a theme through Marika's presentation that in a lot of the working groups we have the same members that are participating. So number one, a thanks to them. But number two, really would like to try to get more folks involved in this stuff. And maybe Michaela and James can speak to the stress that would take off of them always participating in a lot of these work groups. But really, I mean, the stuff that these folks are working on directly is going to impact all of you eventually. And so to be able to have a say in how that policy is developed is important. So I'll put a plug in for participation on the work group stuff. I don't know if either James or McHaley, again, will get put on the spot. But if you guys want to try to put a plug in as well, just to make your lives easier.
Well, it's been better, I think, lately. We've had some new folks, new faces, especially in the transfer working group. I think there was a while there where we were down to our last three registrars, and then one of them got acquired and dropped off the face of the earth. So, you know, that was it was getting a little touch and go. What I would say is that we're always looking for more feedback. You know, McKelly has a certain perspective as a European registrar, very extensive country code experience. I'd like to say that we have a good experience as a large retail registrar and as a large wholesale registrar, but you know, we lean on Matt occasionally as a corporate registrar, but you know, more is better. Thanks.
Yeah, Stefan.
Yeah, thanks. Just want to echo, first of all, the thanks for James and Michele's involvement. And the theme that we were discussing earlier on about decisions that need to be made at council level, I think this also is part of it. The more people understand, know, follow what's going on within these working groups that form the heart of the policy development process that the GNSO Council does, I think the better and the more effective we will be as a group in handling the work that's being done there, which, as you can see from Marika's descriptions and what you've heard earlier on today, does impact or can impact us at any rate. Maybe it won't, but it should. It probably will. Can impact us quite a lot. So I think it's important that we as a group, we follow it and probably get more involved. And just to remind everybody and those that aren't used to the GNSO processes, these working groups are open to everyone. I think it's important to just say that again. You don't have to be a GNSO counselor. You don't have to be a member of the GNSO. You can. These are all-inclusive working groups. So, I think it would certainly warm the cockles of my heart if more people were in there.
Well played. I would also just encourage folks, if you do have questions about, how to get involved and how the process works, and just a little bit of flavor about, how it's been in our experience. Both, we're piling more work on you guys. Both James and Michaela, I'm sure, would be happy to just to just talk to you about, their experiences. There are other people that have done work groups, that have participated. Jeff, myself, I'm sure others in the room that I'm forgetting. So, feel free to ask those folks what it's like and continue to get involved.
And as Marika, just to echo that as well, I'm more than happy as well. We have several presentations as well on how policy development works in the GNSO. We just adopted a revised policy development process for which we developed quite extensive graphics and explanatory materials that are on the GNSO website. So, and happy to take any questions on that as well whenever anyone wants.
Thanks, Marika. Michaela?
Just a couple of things. I mean, first off, before I forget, we should always thank Marika and her team for the amount of work and the hours that they put in around a lot of this stuff. I mean, most of the policy team within ICANN are based in Brussels, in this time zone, and yet you see emails and other things from them at all times of the day and night. And I mean, these people do have lives too. They do have families. So, they do put in a lot of work. Yes, they are paid for it, yes, but, still, they're putting in a lot of work. In terms of participation in this, I mean, we have had more people joining various working groups, which is absolutely fantastic. It's not rocket science. You just need to... The bar is very, very low. You just turn up. And there are some very large registrars, however, who I'm going to pick on them because, they're very, very large, and yet they're not turning up. And then they're turning around and saying, oh, we didn't know about this. It's not that hard. Keep an eye on the ICANN website. If you're not sure what's going on, ask those of us who are keeping track of this stuff. But ultimately, if you don't participate, you're going to end up with policies you don't like, because ultimately, James, myself, and a couple of others will be the only ones who will have provided any input. And if you're happy with that, fine. If what I'm saying upsets you, good. Then hopefully you'll do something about it.
Thanks, Michaela. James? Yeah. Okay. No? Marika?
Yes, Marika. I just have a couple of more slides. If you just go to the next. Oh, no, I think that's one more.
Well, you are nothing if not polite.
No, I think. There's some other issues if you go to the next slide. So I knew Michaela was going to say nice things, so I already put that slide there to tell them thank you. As I mentioned before, we do have many more projects that are active in the GNSO. So, I picked the ones that I thought were most relevant to what you do on a daily basis. So, but if you want to have a regular update and keep track on what is going on, we have the GNSO project lists, which is updated prior to every GNSO council call. So you can go in there. There's a short description on what the project is about. Provides as well information on who is the chair, who is the staff support for that, and gives you latest status on what has changed and what's going on. So that would probably give you a good insight, and then as well a bit of an alert tool as when you need to start paying attention to certain things or which projects you might want to get involved in. And then there's also the monthly policy update, which is provided in several languages, in which the different supporting organizations and advisory committees provide updates on the activities that are going on in their areas, and that's why we also always publish any call for volunteers or call for public comments, so you can find more information on that. And I think that was it.
Great. Thanks, Marika. Any other questions for Marika?
No.
One sec. John?
I had seen lunch on the agenda. I didn't know. I didn't know if we were going to, you know, enjoy the rhapsody of each other's company or get out of this crawl space because my dermatologist said I needed to get some sun.
Ouch! I'm just happy to see you awake, John. That's
you're trying too hard.
Yeah,
you're trying too
hard. So again, thanks to Marika, and I would also, I don't think she's in the room, but Liz Gaster, who's come and presented to this group many times over the past years, will be leaving the organization. This is her last ICANN meeting, and so while she may not be here in the room, I thought we'd just like to give her a round of applause and thank her for her years of service. And now we do have either a lunch or a nap break. If you'd like to go and snuggle up with Stefan, I'm sure he'd be open to that. And we will meet back here at 1:30. I'm giving everyone an extra 2 minutes. Sorry, Mason, you didn't get 10, but you got 2. Thanks, guys. We'll see you back this afternoon. And for those of you on the Adobe, the Connect bridge, we'll be back in 60 minutes.